This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information. Hey everybody, it's Lon Seidman and Tim Street. We are back for Behind the Video number 71. Tim, from LA, how's the weather out there today?
It's a little chilly, but not compared to where you're at.
Yeah, we're getting into fall here, so things are starting to get a little bit cold. And I am on baby duty, so I'm upstairs out of the studio at the moment, and the baby's napping. The dog is prowling, but we're hoping everyone will behave themselves for the half hour, 45 minutes that we do the show. So my wife is volunteering at a zombie run.
So what do you have to do to participate in a zombie run?
Well, you can either be a runner or a zombie. And I guess the zombies are cheaper. So, and actually, I would be better as a zombie than a runner. So, she is actually there to stamp tickets or something. But what it is it's a 5K run, but you're being chased by zombies the whole time.
Nice.
And we, as you know, my paying job, we have we sell gloves and safety equipment. So all of the parking attendants are in hazmat suits.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Which is really cool.
So if the zombies catch you, are you out of the race?
I don't think so. I think you can kind of keep running, but I'm not sure if there's any rules around it. But it certainly affects your time. And
takes all the fun out of it, right?
It sure does. And these guys have been doing it right. They did, you know, they did their own little YouTube video to promote it with zombies. It's for the YMCA here locally, with the zombies running out of the Y, and they've been posting all night, like hourly updates on emergency civic. Yeah, like come to the Camp Hazen. It's the only place left.
Safe
it's
place. Been, yeah. That's awesome. That's yeah. awesome.
They've been doing
That's
it really,
really cool.
Yeah, they've really done it right. So, and it's a great example of how to do a local event to do it really well. So, so we'll see. We'll see how it turned out. But I am home with the dog and the baby. So hopefully at some point we'll be able to do other things. But
I feel like I've been running from zombies all week myself. I was at Digital Hollywood this week in Marina Del Rey.
Tell us about that.
And I was hoping to have Dane on with us, but he is
a zombie today. He's not feeling
He's a
too
zombie
good.
Today. He's not able to join us, which is a bummer because he went to a lot of the sessions and he really spent some boots on the ground type stuff, whereas I was in private meeting after private meeting after private meeting. So I can't, like, for me, the show was great. I got a lot of work done. I met a lot of people, you know, very strategic stuff. So it'd be really interesting. Maybe next week, when he's feeling better, we can get him on the show to talk about Digital Hollywood and all the stuff that went on there. If you ever get a chance to go to Digital Hollywood, make sure you stick around for the pool party every day. They have a cocktail reception out by the pool, and by far that is one of the best networking events I've ever gone to. And I go to a lot of networking events.
And which hotel was it at?
It's at the Ritz-Carlton in Marina Del Rey. So
you're
at a pool and you're at a, you know, you're at a harbor where there's all these sailboats, and you know, it's just a great location to have an event. And a lot of the basketball teams stay there. So there have been years
cool.
where you know, the Mavericks are there. The Jazz were there this time. So you see the NBA players walking around the hallways, which is kind of cool. And I've seen Mark Cuban out at the pool doing phone calls. So it's definitely a great location and a really good place, especially if you're just getting into digital media and you're on the independent side. There are a lot of people from studios, networks, big companies, like Akamai or Freewheel that are there. And so you can learn a lot in a short amount of time. A lot of the sessions for the pros, they seem very similar. There's a little bit of nuance, but it's a small enough conference where you can really meet some people that can move the needle for you. And if you don't know what you want out of digital media or digital programming right just yet, it's a great place to come and learn. So you could literally, you know, sit in one track, and by the end of it, you can pretty much consider yourself an expert as to what's going on in the industry. I mean, you'll get a really good understanding of the nuts and bolts of what's going on. You may not get all the insider stuff that they don't speak about on the panels. That stuff is shared in the hallways and at the cocktail parties.
Yeah.
But as you spend more time there, you'll get more out of it. So definitely a great event to attend. They also do it. Victor Harwood, who does the event, also puts it on in New York. So you can actually go to Digital Hollywood in New York. You can go to Digital Hollywood in L.A. And then sometimes he'll do events at CES. So he'll have it there. So you can kind of get a taste of it if you're at CES.
I think too with some of these events is that you know you speak to the networking and the pool parties and whatnot. I found that at New Media Expo there was a lot of big shots there that were really kind of under the radar. You know, they didn't get a booth or anything, they didn't run an event, but they were there just to kind of get a sense of the lay of the land and try to find some some folks that might be good business partners in the future that might be on the way up. And it's kind of a good thing to just kind of lay low and see who you can run into. I met. One guy from a pretty sizable streaming video company who said he was there really just to kind of see who was on the up and up and build some relationships that when they're ready, they might, use their services. So good stuff to check out.
Yeah, rumor has it you're going to be speaking at New Media Expo January 4th through the 6th in Vegas at the Rio. Is that true?
That is true. I'm going to speak at about whatever you want me to speak about.
Very good. I have a feeling it'll be about doing live shows with Google Hangouts, but we'll see. There's a lot of great programming coming up for New Media Expo. Make sure that you check out nmxlive.com, I think is the website to check out. So give it a look. A lot of great speakers. If you're interested in social media, it's a great place to go. If you're interested in blogging, podcasting, web video, it's ground zero for all that kind of stuff.
And I plan to be there. My flight is booked, and I booked earlier this year, so I'm saving some money too. So it should be
good.
I'm going to stay the last night too, which I didn't do last time. So should be a fun trip, and I'm happy to meet up with anyone who's trying to figure this Google Plus stuff out because we're still trying to do the same thing. So we'll get into the news now. So HBO and Comcast. So it was this big thing this week that Comcast and HBO had some bundled special that you can kind of connect an inexpensive internet connection along with HBO to get the HBO Go, of course. And then there was a Forbes article that you sent me this morning, Tim, that says, well, you're not so fast here. So it's a little complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's clear cut yet. The rumor was, oh my God, you can get HBO Go without having to get cable. And I don't know if the dust is settled yet. I mean, I can't get Comcast in my neighborhood, so it doesn't really matter to me, but everybody's waiting for HBO Go without a cable subscription. I'm actually shopping right now, so later this afternoon I'm going to be hitting up all the different providers that are available in my neighborhood. Right now I have Dish for my satellite, and I've got Charter for my internet. I'm not really happy with either one, so I'm going to try to see what I can do to get something that's better. I mean, for me, I miss TiVo. So much. I really love the TiVo interface and love that. So maybe TiVo comes as part of this. I don't know, but I might feel better if I'm using TiVo and a service that I don't like. Because I think the big complaint for Dish is that I don't like the DVR capabilities.
Yeah, all these boxes are just total crap from these companies. It's really bad. We talked a little bit a few weeks ago about the little bundle they had where I am. So we have in Connecticut, and every market's different, but they have a Blast Plus HBO bundle. So I'm paying a little bit more than what this deal is, because this HBO Go thing is not available where I am. But the deal that we were talking about just a minute ago was $40 a month, but that's the intro plan. You still need to get basic cable, which is part of that price, and then you have to have a cable box. I did what's called Blast Plus, which is the faster internet plus HBO, and I think it's about $85 a month here for that. So, I really like having the faster internet connection, and my wife likes the television, so this kind of worked out pretty nicely. Now, what you can do with TiVo is TiVo still support the cable card system, and what you can do is instead of getting the cable box, ask Comcast or your cable provider to give you a cable card, and they have to do that, I believe, still. Because it was part of their arrangement with the FCC on this thing. And you can take that cable card, plug it into that TiVo, and that TiVo will then work exactly like you want it to, Tim. So you might actually be able to finagle that out of your existing cable company, with Charter. So I would look into that. I'm doing a roll-your-own solution with something called an HD Home Run Prime and a Windows Media Center PC, and I'm using my Xbox as essentially a cable box and an extender off of that PC.
That sounds like you have too much time.
Yeah, this was a weekend.
Yeah.
This is a weekend project. I have two videos on my YouTube channel describing how this works. But I'll tell you what, I set it up, you know, about a month ago now. I haven't had to touch it. It's been amazingly just amazing how well it's been working. So,
you know, we've interviewed a lot of people on the show about the series that they're doing, and I don't think that we've ever really talked that much in detail about the review show that you do.
Sure. Yeah, we want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so how many reviews are you doing per month, and how often are you putting out videos?
It depends. I'm generally doing about 2 to 3 a week. And what's funny is sometimes the content kind of compounds on itself. So I'll put a review up, and maybe I missed something, or maybe I found some new, you know, part of the product that I missed before, and I'll do a secondary follow-up. So I've been doing a lot of response to some of the viewers that have been coming in. What's been interesting about product reviews, Tim, is that a lot of my traffic isn't subscriber traffic. It is search traffic.
Sure.
So people that are looking at, you know, maybe a review from CNET, mine's popping up as a recommended review. So I'm doing about, I think, 2 or 3 a week. I've got a bunch that I'm working on at the moment, and I try to do them really quickly, mainly because I have the dog and the kid.
But, right. Now, are you doing them based on new products that come out, and as soon as you get them, you're doing a review?
Yeah, and you know what's funny is I'm starting to get a real, like, instinct for what might be decent. So case in point, the HP Chromebook came out about 2 weeks ago. It's an 11-inch Chromebook, and it's $279. And I said, oh, this is going to be great for my channel. So I went out and bought it, reviewed it, and then I sold it. So,
right.
So the impact was, you know, maybe $15, and I'll easily make that back on ad revenue. So, I kind of look for that. A lot of the stuff now I'm getting, I've been part of the Amazon Vine program. And that's how this whole thing started. So Amazon has a program called Vine, and I can't tell you how to get into it because they just choose people at random for it. But about 3 or 4 years, maybe 6 years ago now, I get an email from Amazon saying, hey, congratulations, we'd like to put you into our Vine program and let you pick 2 or 3 products a month to review for free. And you get to keep the product. I disclose that in the thing. But it doesn't come from the manufacturer, so it actually comes directly from Amazon. So there's no direct connection between the manufacturer and me on these. And what I was doing was doing these videos and putting them up on Amazon to fulfill my requirements in the program. And what's happened, though, is now I'm starting to get brands contacting me to review stuff. So Panasonic is one of the brands that reached out to me. And I just do a pretty thorough review. And I also look at, you know, what's already out there. So, for example, in the case of a new product that doesn't have a lot of reviews, I'll do kind of a brief overview thing, you know, keep it like under 8 minutes or 5 minutes.
Right.
For something that's been out for a while, I'll go more in depth with it and kind of look at what other people aren't doing and try to do that. So, but it's been, honestly, Tim, the revenue has been like doubling every 2.5 months.
That's great.
So it's been really good. And I found is that even, you know, you can't look at these things as individual videos. So you look at the whole and,
right,
you know, you can do a crap ton of these things and, you know, maybe you only make 50 or 80 cents a month in some of them, but if you have a lot of them,
right,
it just
right,
adds up. And the cost of production is nothing. I mean, I just go in my basement and crank it out, you know, fairly fast. And that's been my model, is just don't spend too much time on each individual video, because most of them won't be blockbusters. And then occasionally, like, you get, so here's a great example. So I did the Tesla review. I took, before I got rid of the Google Glass, I did a review of a Tesla with the Google Glass on. So it was like a first-person perspective.
Right.
And somebody put it on Reddit last week, and it brought in like another 25,000 views.
That's great. Now, the thing is, you're probably still making less than minimum wage.
Yes,
working
I am.
It's a hobby. All these things. Yeah, it's a hobby. Yeah. But it's something that you would be doing anyway.
Right.
You would be looking at a lot of these products, or you would be looking at other people's reviews of these products. You would be spending the time doing this anyway. So right now, you're getting paid for your hobby.
That's it. That's exactly it. And it's got to the point now where it is covering the grocery bill, which has been pretty, I think, pretty impressive. Now, it may not make up for all the equipment I've had to put in.
Yeah, it's interesting that you use that as an example. That sounds like a bargaining chip with your wife.
A little bit.
Whereas if it was, oh, well, it pays for the Xbox and all the video games.
Exactly.
Which
that wouldn't
it does.
Go over as well. Right, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't go over. It covers that cost as well. I mean, not in addition to, but
Right. Yeah.
Separately. So.
It's all just part of the family budget now. Now, it is interesting. The other thing I've been doing, and this is now turning into probably not as much revenue as Google, but about a third of the revenue that I get on Google, is I put an affiliate link back to Amazon in every video.
That was going to be my next question. So are you putting that affiliate link? Now, you have to sign up to become a affiliate member of Amazon.
Right.
And then what kind of, like, do they have their terms posted that you could share with us what the revenue share is?
Yeah, so the way it works is it's 4% right off at the top. So whatever you put in there, you'll get 4% back. When you hit a certain volume, they ramp it up. So it goes from like 4, I think the next step up is 6%, and then it goes to 6.5%. I think it goes as high as 7, depending on how much volume in sales you bring to them. It's not dollar volume, it's the amount of individual items purchased and shipped. Now, they limit it, though, so like on the real expensive stuff like electronics and cameras and computers and that kind of thing, it's locked in at 4. But things like musical instruments fall into the other category. So somebody bought a microphone that I had reviewed, and I got like 6.5% off of that. Now, what's interesting is that no matter what they buy on Amazon from your click, you'll get credit for. So it's not just the product that you're directly linking to. If they go there, not buy that thing you reviewed, but go buy something else, you'll still get some of the credit for
that's
it.
That's great. It's the same on iTunes.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And do you use a short code when you link to it?
I do. I use the Google short code system.
And are you tracking how many clicks you're getting?
Yeah. Yep. I'm tracking that. Amazon does that also. And you can track, you know, by the day or the week or whatever. So it's I get a lot of clicks. It's really,
now,
like, especially on the high volume stuff.
Are you linking to them in your annotations on your YouTube video?
You know, I'm not doing that. I probably should, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
I'm putting it in the description.
My understanding from talking with the YouTube folks is that you have a higher click-through rate if you put the link in your annotations as opposed to the description, a much higher click-through rate.
You know, I need to do that then because I have not done that, and I think I'm going to start very, very shortly doing
that. Yeah, and you could say, you know, see the product and link to it.
Right. And one thing I do is I do disclose that it's an affiliate link, and I want people to know that it's a great way to support the channel, because if they like the work that I'm doing, and I think I'm up to 1,800 subscribers now, doing about 30 to 50, actually I'm up to about 50,000 views a month now on it too. So, and I get this month so far 1,241 clicks to the Amazon affiliate page and a 3.79% conversion. So not too shabby. It's been fun because it's been neat to kind of see this develop, and I'm getting a lot of interaction now with people in the channel. I try to respond to most of the comments. The trolls have been pretty minimal. I don't feed them.
Yeah. Now you can get some more.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get some more trolls in there. So it's been fun, and I think it's something that I like doing anyhow, and I've done it before for nothing. So it's kind of nice to to be able to do that. So pretty good stuff. Should we move on to some charts?
Yeah.
Too?
What else we got going on?
So, you know, we were looking at TubeFilter has been, you know, cranking charts out one after the other. We should become the TubeFilter podcast, actually, because we get so much of our stuff from them. But they did a top 100 most subscribed channels of the month. So we've looked at the most viewed channels of the month. So I figured this month, let's take a look at the most subscribed ones. So as expected, there's some music stars at the top or the bottom of the top five. So Katy Perry had 1 million subscribers this month. This is through Vevo. So that Vevo YouTube partnership. Number four is Miley Cyrus, or otherwise known as the Trainwreck. I think that's a very well planned out train wreck, to be quite honest with you, but 1 million subscribers there. Now, here's where it got interesting, Tim. Beating Katy Perry and Miley Cyrus is PewDiePie.
Yep. Video game.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? 1.2 million subscribers, and that's just this month. It doesn't count what he's already done before that. So
these are new subscribers this month.
That's right.
So what he's picked up this month.
This month. And it shows that people are really starting to use that subscription function. I have found that, you know, again, as you know, it's mostly limited to younger people who do the subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, here's an interesting point, just to, not to pivot back to the review channel, but when I was trying to get over the 1,000 mark to get my free YouTube Live service, I asked my friends on Facebook to subscribe to the channel, and I got, you know, a couple hundred people to do that, and now they only get email from YouTube about the stuff I'm posting, which is kind of funny.
That's funny.
Yeah, because like, oh, I can't get it. You can't stop sending it. I said, look, it's not me. It's YouTube that's sending it. But it's been funny, so it's helping to draw more views. But he's doing really – what do you think he's making, Tim, PewDiePie? I mean, he's got, what, 20-something million views a month?
I would think over $500,000 a month.
A month.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah, over $500,000 a month is what I would. That would be my guess.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yep.
So we'll see. You know, that's something to strive for there, right? And I guess his channel is getting a little cut of that, but he's still doing pretty well for it. So.
Yep.
YouTube movies is number two. And that is 1.4 million, and you know, the trailers and that kind of stuff. People love watching the trailers. I think they like watching the trailers more than they like watching the movies. And it's funny, my wife and I, sometimes we can't agree on what to watch, so we'll just watch trailers all night because we can never agree on a movie.
You know, the thing that I've noticed about like going to Netflix is that I find myself sometimes with the same feeling that I used to get when I was a teenager in a video store. You spend 2 hours in the video store trying to figure out what movie you're going to rent.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, and you're like, oh, man, I need to rent this thing so I can get home and watch it.
Right.
And it's like the same thing on Netflix. I'm looking, and it's just like the great thing is saving stuff to your queue so you can watch it later. But a lot of times you're just in the mood to watch something and you can't find that something on Netflix. Like last night we were looking for The Great Pumpkin, it's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
I was just thinking about that. I was really looking to watch that.
Yeah, and the only place we could easily find it was on iTunes, and it was $10.
Okay.
Kind of like,
that's to buy?
Yeah, to buy. Okay. And it was like, okay, well, we have the VHS somewhere, right? We've already paid for it once. So it's like, do we really want to, you know, spend $10 on something that, you know, it's kind of an impulse, and the answer was no, we didn't do it.
One of the first VHS tapes my parents got for me back in the early 80s was the Charlie Brown Great Pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got it somewhere, probably, hopefully it still works. It's been played, yeah. You know, it's one of those things you used to watch like repeatedly as a kid. So
I still have a VHS. I don't have it hooked up. Like it's in the garage, you know?
Yeah. I have so many tapes to get transferred because, you know, these tapes don't last forever. So it's interesting. And the number one subscribed channel, of course, is YouTube's own channel. So I don't think it's like a Tom thing either, right? Like Tom on MySpace where everybody was his friend.
Yeah,
I think people actually have to subscribe to YouTube to get going, but I'm sure they're pushing their numbers a little bit over that. So so that is it. News-wise, though, Netflix, speaking of which, by the way, I often feel like the Netflix movie selection is like the middle of the Blockbuster store. It's like all the crap that, you know, you'll go with because the new release isn't available.
It's like the early days of home video where, you know, you went into the store and you really had to look hard.
Yeah, you did because there was only one copy of that movie. So I remember when we found Return of the Jedi right when it came out in the local video store. We were like, yeah, score.
You hit the jackpot.
Yeah, you used to have to pay like $80 for those movies back in those days. It was not cheap. So.
Yeah, no.
So Netflix has hit its numbers. The investors are going nuts, according to All Things D, and Reed Hastings is telling them to chill the F out because, like, you can't, you know, the worst thing you could have is high expectations. So,
well, they've hit more subscribers than HBO, and Carl Icahn, he took his money and walked. He made, like, I think a 47% gain is what he cashed out with over the last just few years.
Wow. And they're making good stuff. And I think too that when you look at even though they're putting, you know, $100 billion into some of these home, you know, home grown productions, they really make it back over time because there's more time people are spending watching their stuff than other people's licensed content. So they can do really well. But the stock went up 10% to $390.
Yeah.
So what a great example of pivoting from one model to the other. It's
You know, I mean, the writing's always been on the wall. The name has always positioned what the future was of that company.
Right.
And you knew from the get-go, okay, one day when the technology's ready, I'm just going to be watching the stuff at home via the internet as opposed to getting the DVD. And, you know, when they tried to do that split, that's where it really brought the price down. But the smart people knew that, you know, when the price is down, that's the time to buy.
It is. That is for sure. And it's they've done a really nice job with it. Netflix is going to double its spending on originals because it's working well for them. And they have all the data to know what's going to be successful even before they do it.
Yeah, that's the real value there is when you have that data to look at it and figure out what to do. A lot of the video companies that are surviving and doing really well, like AOL, really pay attention to the data. You know, as opposed to having programming executives, you know, oh, well, this will do it. You know, they can move so much faster in this space than a TV network that is set up on a year-round model.
Right. That's very true. It's going to be interesting to see how things develop there. I just would like to watch more of the movies that I can't get on there. I want to see them. So
yeah.
we'll see how, you know, maybe what kind of market force he can bring to bear on that. So as for movies, speaking of which, another interesting week in Amazing Number One here. We'll get to that in a minute. But the movies, so Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2 is still in the top five, had a $6 million weekend, $100.5 million overall. The Counselor in its first week, $7.5 million. Is that a Oscar contender, Tim? The Counselor.
I don't know. I haven't. That one hasn't jumped onto my radar.
Yeah, I got to look at that. I don't go out anymore. I don't even leave the house anymore.
Bad Grandpa has. So maybe this afternoon I'm going to head out and see Bad Grandpa.
It looks pretty funny. So The Counselor is an upcoming, or it's already out. The 2013. This is according to Google's description here. 2013 drama thriller. It's directed by Ridley Scott, so it's got some good. Some good direction behind it, and it's a, I don't know what it's about, though, a nightmarish scenario in which a respected lawyer's one-time dalliance with a counselor, a legal business deal spirals out of control, so it's another thriller kind of movie, so rent that one. Captain Phillips, number three, $70 million weekend, I'm sorry, $70 million overall weekend was $11.7 million. I don't think that one did as well as they thought it would. Hanging on at number two is Gravity. It's almost $200 million. What a great turn for that film. The weekend was $20 million overall. And
$20 million is a great weekend.
Yeah, especially when it's been out for over a month now.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
And I had an opportunity to interview an astronaut for cttechjunkie.com, the local site here. He was in Russia. We did a satellite interview. Actually, it was just over phone, but the video comes in that way. Was asked if he watched Gravity, and he said it was a very entertaining film. So he enjoyed it. It wasn't, you know, necessarily the most realistic thing for him. And he tweeted out a little picture of him and his crewmates watching it in the movie theater, and he said probably not the best thing to watch 2 weeks before you leave for the space station, but they enjoyed it. So pretty good film there. And then number one is Jackass, as you mentioned, Bad Grandpa. And I guess, Tim, this is like a combination of a scripted storyline with Borat kind of candid camera stuff, right?
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, one of the things that like I always liked about the Borat TV show was that the mark never knew that they were the mark. And, you know, it was hidden camera in a way, or, you know, they knew the cameras were there, but they didn't know that a joke was being played on them. So I'll be interested to see how much of that in Bad Grandpa happens to where real people are being fooled as opposed to actors are pretending to be fooled.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Interesting. Yeah, it's at some point, right, if these things keep coming. Going the way they are, it's going to go the way of reality television, where the reality is really more fake than real.
Yeah.
But Borat, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen is a real genius with this stuff, and this one I think will be equally funny, so worth checking out, I am sure, for mature audiences, of course. But there's some concern in New York City. I guess Michael Bloomberg is moving on to his next project, and he's leaving the mayorship there. And the film and television production has been really thriving in New York City, but some are wondering, according to Hollywood Reporter, if things are going to change because the front runner for the Democratic candidate, who's the front runner, Bill de Blasio, he's a former city advocate, definitely doesn't share the same politics as Bloomberg, and he may not continue some of the tax credits and whatnot. So, I mean, this has been hurting Hollywood too, right, that there's been so many really aggressive tax credits in other states that a lot of shooting is happening in other locations, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a constant ongoing battle. There are some people that feel that the tax credits really help. They bring a lot of production dollars to the city. There's other people that say that giving the tax credits only disrupts things and doesn't really help the local community. It's not like it sets up businesses that stay there and build and bring more people to the city and hire more employees. So it is a sliding ruler, and it's hard to say. I'm sure that there have been some towns that have really benefited from it, and you know, get tourism for years to come because a movie was shot there. But it's every movie's different and every case is different. So it's a tough call.
And speaking of movies, Star Wars Episode 7, J.J. Abrams joining with Lawrence Kasdan to screenwrite the return of the Star Wars trilogy. Hopefully this one will fare better than the last three did. Kasdan wrote, this is according to The Wrap, he was the guy that wrote The Empire Strikes Back. He was one of the co-writers of it. So, yeah. I mean, can the hype get any bigger for this movie?
He wrote Body Heat, I think, as well. As one
oh,
of
really?
The films that he wrote. He's a great writer. I mean, really has written some great films over the years.
Oh, he did The Return of the Jedi, too. So. Yeah. Maybe is hope a yeah. new hope? Could it be?
Yeah. The tough thing is I recently was down at Walt Disney World, and was going through the park, and you know Disney now owns all the Star Wars stuff, and I was really shocked at the T-shirts that were being sold. I mean, there were some that were really funny, you know, where they'd have Darth Vader on them and.
Like with mouse ears or something?
Yeah, Darth Vader with mouse ears, that kind of stuff. And it was just like, you know, as a Star Wars fan, it was like, you know, I was kind of cringing as a Star Wars fan.
Don't kill the brand, don't kill the brand.
Yeah, and as a Disney fan, I was kind of like, oh, that's pretty funny, you know?
Yeah,
so
right.
There was this internal turmoil where I was like, man, Disney is doing stuff to Star Wars that they would never, ever, ever let be done to Disney characters.
Exactly.
And
that's exactly
that really surprised me. Like, it felt hypocritical and sacrilegious at the same time. But yet, there was the side of me that enjoyed it.
My concern here is that I think what's led to such an enormous success of Star Wars was the fact that it was very scarce. That new content in that universe was always very few and far between. And I think, you know, George Lucas, you can say what you will about his screenwriting abilities, but his business acumen was spot on from the get-go, including, you know, having retaining full rights to all of the licensing and characters when he started out on this thing, because people thought he was nuts for doing it. He's certainly laughed all the way to the bank on it. You know, if they do too much content, I think it's going to cheapen the brand a little bit more, and we'll see. I mean, hopefully, obviously these are funny little T-shirts to make and stuff, but I'm hoping they don't do too much with this thing and kind of let it develop. And, you know, I've watched, you know, the Star Wars trilogy a gazillion times. What do you think about, I mean, if you look at the dialogue and everything else, special effects still hold up pretty well, even the originals do. But, you know, the dialogue wasn't all that more advanced than the other trilogy that followed it, right? I mean,
right.
Is it just that we have fonder memories because we were kids when we first saw it?
Well, yeah, I think it was a thing that was created for kids, and then we all grew up, and so, you know, the kids don't have a problem with Jar Jar Binks.
No, they went crazy over the new trilogy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I have cousins that, you know, grew up with it. That it's their Star Wars as the originals were ours.
And the same way is, you know, when young adults went to see the original Star Wars, they thought R2-D2 and C-3PO were stupid, whereas we loved them.
Right.
So, I mean, it's the same thing.
I'm looking forward to that episode 7. I hope it, like, bridges the gap, you know?
Yeah, Well, if there's anybody whose hands, the only two people I could think of to do this and really take care of it would be J.J. Abrams or Joss Whedon. Mm-hmm. Those two guys, without a doubt, I think could really handle this franchise and deal with the Disney folks you know, turn out something that's going to look fantastic.
And I think, you know what's too, you know, given their age, they've grown up in that pop culture. So who, you know, and they're probably the most creative of our age group and being able to effectively meet those demands and those expectations. And I'm hoping that they do that. But I'll tell you what, this is probably the worst gamble of J.J. Abrams' career, because you have so much anticipation over this thing that if you F this one up...
you know what? It's like he could quit tomorrow. He'd be fine.
Yeah, that's true.
He'd be fine.
That's true. He's got plenty of money now. So
he doesn't have to worry.
No, but I'm looking forward to it. So we'll move on to our apps and tips of the week. And I've got a quick one, Tim, and then I know you've got a really cool one. So here's the thing. So we've been talking about these ways to get footage off your phone and onto a more secure platform just in case you lose your phone or something else happens to it. And you know, you could always run it to Dropbox or one of those cloud services, but you know, the space tends to fill up rather quickly on those services as you use them, and they charge you a arm and a leg for, you know, for adding more space. But Western Digital just came up with this new hard drive, and it's called the WD MyCloud. And it's a hard drive you plug into your home network, and it works just like Dropbox does. It has an app. You can, you know, toss your photos and videos to it. You can, it works with your computer too, so you can, you know, throw things up to that. And it works pretty well in that it really wasn't hard to set up.
How much space do you get on it?
There's a 2 terabyte and a 3 terabyte version.
And it's, and like, what does it run?
It's like under $200. I think it's like $150, $160. So it,
because you can buy a 1 terabyte Western Digital drive for about $80.
Yeah, so they pretty much double it with the, you know, with the electronics and stuff that they must put in there. I'm sure they're making a good profit off of these add-on kind of devices. Mm-hmm. But I found it to be pretty decent in that it just works. You know, like a lot of this stuff tends to get, you know, it looks good in concept, but never really, you know, works in practice. And this thing has been really easy to set up. Yeah, the 2 terabyte is $149, and the 3 terabyte is $180.
Any idea what 2 terabytes would cost you at Dropbox?
You know, I would have to look, but I think it's a lot. It's like in the $50 or $60 a month territory. So, you know, so the difference is you don't get all the backup and everything. But
within 3 months, you've covered your cost.
Easily. And the other thing you can do with it, which is really cool, is you can plug in an external hard drive into it. You can keep stacking it. You can back up the Western Digital drive to the external.
Yeah,
which is really useful. So, so that's kind of a neat little feature. Yeah, it's a cool product. So I reviewed it on my my channel there, so you can check it out.
Now, can you use it? Can you use it as a media center? Can you keep stuff on there? That's great.
And in fact, can you
access it from your iPad?
Yes, you can access it. So it has the app for that. But if you have like a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox 360 or anything that supports DLNA standard, which just about everything does these days. So here's a great example. I took a video off my iPhone, tossed it from the phone to the hard drive, and then I was able to turn on my Samsung television and pull the video off of the hard drive that way. It shows up as a source automatically if it's on your network.
Wow.
So it's really, I don't think there's a faster way to get stuff off your phone and put it on your television than that.
That's really cool. Now, where can people watch your review?
Go to my YouTube channel, so youtube.com/LONSEIDMAN. I think it's one of the ones that's on the top of the list there, so you can check it out there and take a look at it. It's pretty cool. So Tim, you got a cool browser, and before you start, I will tell you that I had that astronaut interview, I was pulling down YouTube footage with KeepVid, because now the cool thing when you cover a government program is that anything the government produces for that particular program, like NASA, is free to use in your own video. So you can
public domain.
You can essentially just swipe it and run with it. But they don't really have an archive, so I go to their YouTube channel to grab that stuff. I mean, they have an archive at the Kennedy Space Center, but you have to fly to Florida to get at it. So you found something that would make my life easier.
Yeah, so if you haven't checked out KeepVid, that's a great way to download a YouTube video so that you can use it in a presentation or, you know, edit it into a news piece or an entertainment piece. You know, you still have to get the rights to it, but at least you can get a hold of it so that you know you have it. But sometimes KeepVid just takes a little while to do it. You got to go to their website, you got to punch in. And I found this browser called Torch, and it seems to use KeepVid to make it happen. And I don't use Torch as my main browser yet, but if I have a video that I want to download from YouTube, there's just a button right on it. There's also share buttons for Facebook, for Twitter, so I'm going to play around with it a little bit more, see how much I like it, but right now it's pretty amazing for downloading videos really quickly. So check out Torch. It's a free download that you can get enjoy.
I'm looking through some of the features here. If you are on, it has like a drag and drop video feature. So if you have a video and you drag it into the browser window, it'll pull up all the services that it works with. So you can drag it to YouTube, Wikipedia, image search, Facebook, Twitter, and more, it says. So you could just drag stuff right onto there. So that's pretty cool. I guess you could search and share that. Oh, I guess you could search for an image by dragging the image onto it. That's pretty cool. It has built-in BitTorrent. So if you want to, you know, download legal media via BitTorrent. You can do that. The Media Grabber, I think, is really a good feature there, Tim. I'm going to check that out. And it has a share button, as you said, on everything there. So pretty cool. And it's built on Chrome. So it's got the Chrome code as its base. Chromium, the open source version of Chrome, is running on the back end of it. Pretty neat.
Yep.
So, Tim, my baby is starting to stir. I see her little feet moving in the pack and play over there. So we've got another minute or two. But where can people find you on the internets?
You can find me at OneTimStreet on Twitter or at OneTimStreet.com.
And you can find me at lonseidman.com, LONSEIDMAN.com. That goes to my Google Plus page, and everything that I post, no matter where it goes, ends up there at some point. So you can check it out there. You can subscribe to me on the YouTube channel also if you're into gadgets like I am. I try to do a couple of those a week. And you can find our show at behindthevideo.com, and that'll put you into our Google Plus community. And if you haven't joined that, you should, because we will give you a reminder every time we shoot the show. And we do that Sunday mornings at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific. And then we post our show to all the major pod trackers like Stitcher and iTunes and YouTube, for that matter, too, goes up around Wednesday night. So check us out. Subscribe to whatever platform you like to subscribe on, because that way we can get more viewership, which has been growing. So we've been doing pretty good. So that will do it for this edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.